KJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. This is edition 307. And on the program this week, I'm sharing a conversation with Aaron Van Sinjen, who is an analyst and writer and recently co-authored an important book called The Sustainability Class, which I have featured on the program. On the interview that I am sharing today, I'm going to be talking with Aaron about a piece that he worked on in collaboration with Breach Media, which is called Why Canada Needs Public Grocery Stores. And this is a piece that got a lot of attention and has created a lot of conversation until now. It is about public option grocery shops, and Aaron looks at what this means for Canada, but also examples of what public food options look like from Mexico to France, and importantly highlights other examples of where publicly funded food systems are present, particularly within the prison system. And I think that this is an insightful piece that Aaron worked on. You can find it at breachmedia.ca. And I think it provides some really important context and ideas to challenging some of the crisis of affordability that a lot of people are facing today. So here is the conversation for Free City Radio.
Today in Canada, but also in many places around the world, there's an increasing struggle around what's called the cost of living. That, of course, includes housing costs, but also just basic food necessities and accessing food at the grocery store or in other locations. In the Canadian context, there's a very tight monopoly on the market in terms of major grocery shops being controlled by a few corporations. This is common in a lot of Western contexts, but we're talking about this one, which, you know, you can kind of zoom out and see that from as an example in other places too. So Aaron, you have taken, I can imagine, quite a lot of time to produce a sort of a think piece, but in a video format in collaboration with The Breach, breachmedia.ca, I believe. That's right, which has sort of brought forth some of these kind of realities around inequities in terms of food staple access, but also you take it farther. You're not just naming the problem, you're thinking about collective possible alternatives like food co-ops, public grocery shops, which is a conversation a lot of media right now because of some of the proposals from Zoran Mamdani in New York. Maybe we can just first start with an introduction from you, just about you and your work, and then maybe just some, what was the sort of key reason that you sort of embarked on this discussion?
Yeah, so I'm a writer, I'm a researcher. I've written a lot on like economic policy and environmental policy. And now I work for this organization, Food Secure Canada. And in the last 2 years, we've led this campaign on food affordability. And it's become actually very interesting because when we started the campaign, food inflation was going way high. And it became maybe the number one political topic in Canada. Right around when I started, there was a big boycott where people were organizing a month-long boycott of Loblaws, which is the largest supermarket chain in Canada. I think 90% of Canadians live within 10 kilometers of a Loblaws or its affiliates. Wow. So that's basically, they really hold a huge share of the market, and people are really pissed about it. And strangely, the political parties, the three big political parties haven't really kind of broken out and proposed anything that really will change the what people are pissed about, which is the escalating, the skyrocketing food prices. Since 2020, food prices in Canada, kind of all around at the grocery store, have gone up 25%. Actually, since this year, 27%, and some items have even like doubled in price at the grocery store. So people are really hurting, and you know, housing is the other other big issue that people are worried about. But food is like something you see every day, because you go to the grocery store, you buy some food on your way to work, you shop, maybe get groceries once a week. You think about it all the time, and you get angry about it. You see that cheese has doubled in price, or that packages have shrunk, so that you're getting less of what you used to get for a higher price. So people are really pissed. And we were doing work, I was researching, writing opinion pieces on this issue, and our campaign got some interest, but it was really astounding, because when I was kind of working on this issue, people from The Breach came to me and said, do you want to write the script of a video on this? And so we put out this video a few weeks ago, and the response has been overwhelming and amazing, and kind of beyond anything that my organization has been able to do in terms of like piercing through the national conversation on this issue. So that's been very interesting, is that this video really hit a nerve. A lot of people were really into it, and then the mainstream, the establishment media, was really kind of like viscerally against it, and picked it up and tried to spend a lot of time arguing against it. So it really struck a nerve.
Well, that's probably a good sign in a lot of ways. Maybe for people who are hearing this, if you could just highlight some of the key points that you were really trying to get across. And just, you mentioned Food Secure Canada, which is a really interesting organization that's been around a long time. Good to have that context, and I encourage people hearing this to look up the group. But yeah, just for listeners, can you describe some of the key points that you were addressing in the piece that you worked on?
Yeah, so the video is called Why Canada Needs Public Grocery Stores. And that title was intended to be provocative and kind of a hook to draw people in. Because it starts, you know, imagine if you have a grocery store where prices are actually affordable and you kind of feel at home in it. How crazy of an idea is that? And then it goes on to say, why don't we have that? Describing, you know, how 80% of all Canadian grocery market share is captured by only 5 corporations. And actually, that is more concentrated than many other countries, even in the West. Like, that is a lot worse than the United States. Like, we do have a very, like, monopolized, concentrated food retail system.
80% of the market captured by 5 corporations. In Canada, this is pretty common also in terms of like cell phone carriers and other airlines, other sort of major infrastructural businesses.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a huge issue. Basically, Canada is a bit of a like monopoly state. A lot of people think of it as, you know, highly capitalistic, but the fact is that it's highly monopolistic. The state really supports a high concentration of a few companies. And the thing is, just one, Loblaws, it controls 40% of the market share. So that it really shows that there's one company that really has a lot of power. And the thing is during inflation, you know, prices go up during periods of inflations, and a lot of companies make a lot of money all down the supply chain. But it's been shown that food retail companies, these supermarket companies, have increased their prices above the average rate of inflation and actually increased their profit margins. The profit margins have doubled in that time, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what our video pointed to, is that the reason why we have these, one of the reasons why we have these high food prices is because of this monopoly. And then it pointed to actually what are some solutions, and it pointed to used actually the example of Mexico, where you do have this public food distribution and grocery system that works very well and offers really affordable prices to poor people all across the country, in small communities, in cities. And it's a very interesting system. And just the fact alone that that exists should be proof enough to show that it is possible to have an alternative. And even in the video, we're not saying, you know, we need, let's say, like a Soviet-style, you know, rationing system where everyone has, you know, has to shop at the same grocery store. No, we're just saying we have to increase the competition that exists and offer an alternative that is, you know, for people, publicly controlled and publicly organized. And that could be at a municipal level. It could be funded by the federal government, but where towns kind of are responsible for figuring it out. And what's incredible is just the amount of support this idea got. It was really kind of profound to see that people are so excited about it. And a lot of people were in the comments were saying, you know, I've never heard of this before. It's an amazing idea. And really, a lot of the anger against this food monopoly was coming out that none of the political parties have really been addressing satisfactorily.
Well, that's a really kind of key point, which I think plays across the US-Canada border and in other contexts where, like, populist right parties are talking about the cost of living.
Yes.
And I think it's important to acknowledge that and sort of dig into the ways that those issues are brought up, but it's not really acknowledged that there are systemic shifts that need to happen.
Yeah, so it is true that, you know, the right wing is really talking about cost of living in the way that liberals, kind of the center, hasn't really done or done effectively. So in Canada, you have Pierre Poilievre, who has been kind of hammering on and on about the cost of living, how it's increased. And when he talks about the causes of that, it's really strange, because you're like, wait, this isn't really, you know, he's just basically arguing the reason why cost of living has gone up is because the liberals have pumped so much money into the economy from public spending. And then also the carbon tax has increased kind of prices all across the board. But there's no research to show that this either of those are true.
Yeah, that's an important point.
Yeah. So the causes are false that he says. And what are his solutions are actually cutting back public funding, public institutions. Other solutions that he talks about are basically, you know, increasing lowering taxes so people have more money to spend, so cost of living isn't so much of a problem. These aren't really solutions, and I think that's kind of why a lot of people are realizing, oh, this isn't really offering us much anything. But I think in Canada, the draw to that kind of politics is, you know, we've had 15 years of liberals now, and people are tired. Like, a lot of young people are tired and are seeing the problems in society, and they want something else, and they're angry. But the fact is that neither of the big parties in Canada are offering a real alternative. And I think that's why a video like this really caught on, and why it made the establishment so angry.
Well, just to also highlight some of the research you mentioned showing that the conservative talking points around cost of living issues the fact that those things are false was shown to be very clear from the Canadian Centre of Policy Alternatives. They did some important work on that. Look that up. Also, Food Secure Canada, which you mentioned, look that up. Quick search, you'll find it. But it brings up these questions about infrastructure, right? And I think what I really appreciated about your video is it brings up that question of what does public infrastructure look like, right? And so, you know, an obvious thing to sort of highlight is that there's a lot of public infrastructure that is central to people's lives. Public schools, libraries, roads and transit, these are all things that are covered in a public context. Mark Carney, the Canadian Liberal PM, Prime Minister, has talked about sort of quote-unquote nation-building projects, but is attacking one of the key ones, which is the Postal Service, which is definitely a public project. So maybe you could just dig in a bit more about this idea of how some of the sort of thematics and proposals that you outlined in your video speak to the importance of developing public infrastructure and how that also relates to questions of alternative power construction that is not driven by corporations.
Yeah, it's been kind of interesting. The number one response to the video has been, you want public grocery stores? Look at Canada Post. Look at Air Canada. See how well that's gone. Look at the healthcare. See how well that's going. But this is actually a very worrying kind of response and a very worrying myth, because those things are going very badly exactly because the government has refused to fund them in the way that they need to be funded.
Yeah.
And we know that actually, you know, that infrastructure, it does take a lot to maintain. It does take a lot of resources to keep going, but it's a lot better than the alternative. It's a lot better than, you know, having that be organized for profit, and having that be organized for, for, you know, private wealth.
Yeah.
And, you know, these same people never say something like, look at how the roads are going, because everyone kind of knows and assumes that we all need roads and we all need some kind of infrastructure. Everyone knows it would be a disaster if private companies were like designing our cities and building them, because we know that's something that it needs to be done by a nonprofit, well-organized entity. So why not? Same with schools. People aren't like, look at the schools, how bad that's going. Yeah, there's a lot of problems with schools, but no one wants schools to be for profit and private. Some people do, but a lot of people immediately see the problems with that. It's not a very popular policy. So it's really strange that we have all these things that are public, that we know are good when they are public, but food is never really brought up as a potential place for public infrastructure. But, you know, here we're sitting in exactly one of those places. We're sitting at the Jean Talon Market. It's a public market. There's private stalls, but there's local farmers that set up their stalls, and it's public infrastructure. There's public transit that gets people there, and it's crowded every day, every weekend. It's totally crowded because people love it. And it's one of the main attractions that bring people to visit Montreal is its markets. So yeah, I think food definitely has the potential to have more kind of public presence. And something that we talk about in the video is, actually, I agree with a lot of the critiques that it would be very hard to set up a public grocery store because the margins are so low. You have a really tough time competing with these big companies that work at scale. What's important to start with is actually a kind of public distribution system where you, let's say, could have warehouses and logistics connecting farmers to local markets. And now, you know, in Canada, we're increasingly funding school food, you know, bringing food to schools. why not connect that with a public distributor? Why not get local farms, farmers to distribute to hospitals?
Sure.
So there's definitely a lot of like potential there for more infrastructure, public infrastructure, and everyone's calling for it. Farmers are calling for it. Schools are calling for it. Municipalities want better access to food infrastructure. It's just, yeah, as you said, you know, the government isn't really seeing this as part of its nation building project. What they see as nation building is, you know, pipelines and ports to export the natural resources. But there's very other way, you know, we have just one more thing is like we have a hollowing out of like rural communities who are losing their wealth and losing their people. Connecting farmers with municipalities through public food systems would be an incredible way to revitalize a lot of communities.
I'm thinking about also the fact that in New York City there's a number of public grocery stores, one near Union Station. There's a number. So in the show notes, we'll link to a piece about that, soundcloud.com/freecityradio. So even the proposals in New York City aren't coming out of nowhere. And of course, just thinking about infrastructure, I think is so important in the sense that there's sort of this process where these sort of like more challenging questions around like future steps to collectively take are sidestepped by political forces. That includes, of course, the conservatives here or even south of the colonial borderline. Trump is talking about cost of living, or at least did a lot during the campaign, but is not doing any sort of work to, well, clearly to create any public infrastructure that would address that. In this context, even the sort of small left party, the NDP, has not really picked up this idea of creating work, sort of public works around food or other issues. So just maybe just on this last point, a lot of people will sort of brush away conversations about this because it seems challenging, because it seems out of the norm, because it seems different, right? I think if we were to propose libraries today, mm-hmm. as opposed to 200 years ago, people would probably say something similar, right? Yeah. So maybe we could just end on that, is like the importance of thinking about that sort of collective work and how it's obviously not simple, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. And I really appreciated how in your piece you sort of got into some of the details of about what that infrastructure could look like, including food distribution setups.
Yeah, I mean, that's some, you know, people kind of know. People know that libraries are a good thing. It's good to get free books and be able to read them for free. And people kind of accept that that's a necessary expenditure of your, you know, your municipality, that we need libraries, places to hang out, places to get knowledge, places to learn. And what's interesting is, like, if you kind of propose it as a food library, like, why don't we just have a place where you can get food at cost?
Yeah.
For a lot of people, like, they're like, what? That's crazy. And for a lot of people, something clicks. It's like, yeah, why not? And there's so many examples where that's the case. In the video, we talk about the Restos U in Paris. Basically, all university students in Paris can go to a cafeteria and get a full meal for the price of a bag of chips. Like, it's really amazing, and it works really well. Everyone's happy with it. It's not communism. It just requires a kind of infrastructure. And then something else, another example is actually our armed forces and our correctional facilities. I was looking this up. These both have public infrastructure that do procurement of local Canadian food and processing it in-house for like all the armed forces that are stationed in bases and all prisoners. Now, these aren't institutions that I support. But interestingly enough, it seems okay for those kind of large-scale public institutions, but not for everyone else, you know? So it's definitely possible. We can do this at scale. For those institutions, they figured out how to do it well and efficiently. For both of those, the average is about $5 per meal, and that includes like labor and infrastructure costs. So that's really low. Like, I would be, you know, if I ask anyone, would you be interested if there's a place where you can go, you don't have to show anything, you can pay $5 just to get like a full meal that includes, you know, a drink, coffee, and a dessert, a salad, a healthy meal, everyone, I think, would be like, yes, absolutely, I would love that. And yeah, I think it's just something that everyone supports, but it's so strange that it's so outside of our cultural imaginary. We don't think of this being a possibility. I'll just say, like, one last thing is, I think food is really at the core, the commodification of food is at the core of capitalism. It's at the core of the history of capitalism. Yeah. So it really is kind of the core myth of capitalism that food has to be for profit. But there's a lot of examples already in our world, in the West, all around the world, where that's not the case. And, you know, times are dire. The cost of living crisis is real, and we need solutions.
Well, thinking also just about, you mentioned this, but for a reference of people who are listening who might be interested, some people will know about this, but the sort of destruction of the framework of access to public lands in England, the occupation of the commons and sort of the privatization of agriculture by the powerful was so central to the development of industrial capitalism. The video that you talked about, Aaron, is up at breachmedia.ca?
That's right.
Okay, yes. Okay, and the organization you're working with is Food Secure Canada. Thank you so much for the conversation today.
Thank you so much. I'm really pleased to be here.
Right on. And I should also note, as Aaron mentioned, we're doing this in a public market setting. So you hear the noise of the city, but that's part of it. We're sitting outside. So thanks.
That was a conversation with author and researcher Aaron Vansichan, speaking on a recently published piece called Why Canada Needs Public Grocery Stores. You can look that up at breachmedia.ca. Thanks to Aaron for being on the program today. I'm Stefan Christoff, and this is another edition of Free City Radio. Thank you to the Social Justice Center at Concordia University for supporting this project. We broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on CJLO, 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Thursdays at 8 a.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. and Fridays at 1:30 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m. on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m. on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. and on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can look up at our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We're also a podcast. Just look us up, search Free City Radio through Apple Podcasts and other mediums. I'm Stefan Christoff. Thanks so much for being with us, and I'll speak to you next week.